I'm Julie Mooney, and this is Teaching Strides, Season 3, Episode 1, Indigenizing University Education. Teaching Strides is a podcast series featuring Mount Royal University faculty members discussing some of their finest teaching practices. Teaching Strides is recorded and produced in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, in Treaty 7 territory, the traditional territories of the Niitsitapi nations, which include the Siksika, the Piikani, and the Kainai. We also acknowledge this place as the traditional lands of the Tsuut'ina Nation, Iarhi Nakoda Nation, and the Métis Nation Region 3. Today we speak with Professors Jennifer Pettit and Liam Hegarty. Dr. Jennifer Pettit is a full professor in Indigenous Studies and History and interim dean of the Faculty of Arts at Mount Royal University. Her research in Indigenous history and Canadian history has been funded by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada and the Department of Canadian Heritage. As an advocate for experiential and service learning, Professor Pettit is a multi-award-winning educator, having been recognized with the Merlot Classic Award for History, the prestigious Pierre Burton Award, 4 Teaching Excellence Awards from the Mount Royal Students Association, 2 Distinguished Faculty Awards, and an award for teaching innovation from the Alberta Colleges and Institutes Faculty Association. Dr. Liam Hegarty is an Associate Professor of Indigenous Studies in the Department of Humanities and Coordinator of Indigenization for the Division of Academic Affairs. He is a settler scholar originally from Victoria, BC, unceded Coast and Straits Salish Territory, where he received his BA and MA from the University of Victoria. He completed his PhD at the University of Saskatchewan in Treaty 6 Territory before arriving at Mount Royal University in 2011. His research focuses on Indigenous education and cross-cultural relationship building as necessary elements of Indigenization and reconciliation in Canada today. Welcome, Jennifer Pettit and Liam Hegarty, to Teaching Strides.
Thank you.
Right on. Thanks for having us.
So I'll invite you first to just give us a sense of what the context is of the work you're doing in Indigenizing the Academy, in creating space for Indigenous knowledges and ways of learning in the academy.
We've done a number of things. We've built a minor, but one of the things that we're here to talk about today is our Treaty 7 Field School that we started back in 2013.
Yeah, and the Treaty 7 Field School is really, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was a catalyst for a lot of work that's happening across campus now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about a faculty learning community that we've been running this year, which is almost like a classroom for teachers, for instructors here at Mount Royal, and is part of these broader initiatives that we have going now at Mount Royal to, like you said, create space for Indigenous knowledge and embracing Indigenous ways of learning within kind of Western academic tradition that we work in.
So tell us a bit about what is the Treaty 7 Field School, Jennifer?
The Treaty 7 Field School, the idea behind it was trying to address really this problem in which Indigenous voices and knowledge have been silenced in the academy. And one of the things we wanted to do, I co-teach the field school with Liam, was try to find a way to get students out of the classroom, getting them exposed to Indigenous knowledge and things that they wouldn't necessarily encounter in a lot of their other classes. The way it's structured, we have a block week of classroom-based learning. We do some local trips as well. And then we actually go out into all of the different nations that were part of Treaty 7 and visit them for about a week and a half.
And where is Treaty 7 for our listeners who aren't familiar with it?
So Treaty 7 territory, essentially southern Alberta. Our trip takes us here in Calgary, and then we head out to the Stoney Nakoda Nation, which is west of us. We go east of us all the way out to Siksika, and then farther south, we go to Piikani and Kainai, and then close to home here, we go to Tsuut'ina as well.
And who gets involved in the Treaty 7 Field School? Who would sign up for the field school?
One thing we've really wanted to try to make happen with the field school is ensure that we get students from all different disciplines. So we've had students from education, nursing, history, psychology, sociology, you name it, social work as well. And there's always a mix of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students. Some of the Indigenous students are from here, from Treaty 7 territory, and some are from farther afield as well.
And Liam, you're also involved in the Treaty 7 Field School. How did you get involved and what's been your experience of it?
When I was hired at Mount Royal in 2011, the field school existed as a course on the books that had never been offered. It took us about a year and a half to get it organized and designed. It's been undoubtedly the most profound learning experience for me as an instructor and the most rewarding teaching I've done at any point. I really believe in field schools. I think my academic career really, probably the turning point for me was as a graduate student doing a field school, an ethnohistory field school in British Columbia with the Stalo First Nation. And that's a more research intensive kind of graduate level field school. But the idea of building relationships with Indigenous communities and being able to kind of tailor the Western academic kind of model of education to meet the needs not only of our students, but also of Indigenous communities. For me, that's at the heart of what I do. And I think what really, the talk today in Canada about reconciliation through education and through indigenization and decolonization, I mean, that's at the core of changing the way we teach and learn.
So I'm wondering, what does teaching look like in the context of the field school where you're incorporating Indigenous knowledges and ways of learning into the classroom and the field study portion of the course?
Right from the beginning, it was really important to both Liam and I that we collaborate with our community partners. Sometimes you have to know when to get out of the way, as they say, when you're teaching these sorts of things. We didn't want to just go to elders in the community and say, this is what we want you to talk about with our students. We let them decide what was important to them. A big part of it as well isn't necessarily teaching. It's taking part in things, taking part in cultural activities. So we do drum making with the students. We take them to a Sundance. We go to powwows. We visit important sites like Writing on Stone, mm-hmm. and get tours of places like that with Indigenous partners that we formed throughout the past couple of years of the field school.
So you're actually, in a way, you're becoming learners as well and co-teachers with Indigenous partners.
Absolutely. Another really important part of the field school that's emerged as it's grown over the past few years is a focus on service learning as well. So students have to find different service learning activities to take part in when they return from the field school. So and that's that idea of giving back again to those communities that we've been partnering with. So.
And could you give an example of, say, one of the service
Sure.
learning
a lot
projects?
Of times with service learning, the whole class will do a project together, and instead what we've had students do is go out and find their own opportunities. We suggest them, of course, but some of them, for instance, the social work students we've had came back and they did a series of lectures about what they learned to their classmates. We've had people go back to some of the different communities that we visited and work in different projects that the communities have come up with. So for instance, some of the students go out on a fish rescue project that takes place in the Old Man River. The fish swim into the dammed part of the river and they get stuck, and so we remove those before winter comes to help save the fish populations. Others have done an information booth here on campus, volunteered for events like Red Talks, Making Treaty 7, like a huge variety of different things that they've taken part in.
And Liam, can you talk a little bit about the student experience in the field school?
The way that we've built the Indigenous Studies program here is that you can't really learn about the Indigenous peoples, cultures, histories, and landscapes of Treaty 7 or anywhere else without getting on the land itself, right? Learning from the ground beneath your feet. And that can be really challenging. A lot of field schools are offered internationally or in different places where students assume that they're going into a different context. Here, they often think that they know Southern Alberta. This is a familiar place. This is home to them. But what they find when they're immersed in some of the more kind of culturally challenging contexts and situations, what they find is that the familiar becomes unfamiliar really quickly. That the places they think they know and the places they call home, they actually have a lot more to learn about. And it challenges our comfort zone in a really productive and enlightening way. It's really educational, not only academically or intellectually, I think, but also very on a personal level. They get to know different stories, different names for the places they regularly visit. They rethink what home means and what it means to be either a settler or an Indigenous person in Southern Alberta. And that's hard to quantify, right? It's hard to assess and develop assignments for that kind of learning. But that's clearly what comes across in the feedback we get from students. And even just watching them throughout the course of the field school, we see those kind of personal transformations. And that's really, I think, really gratifying as an instructor, but it's also really inspiring.
Absolutely. It's really reaching to the whole person, not just the cognitive or the intellectual learning that we often associate with the academy.
Yeah, and that's something that we've always heard from Indigenous educators that we work with. This needs to be a holistic education model. We need to educate the entire person, not just the intellectual portion.
So if any of our listeners were interested in finding out more about the Treaty 7 Field School, is there somewhere they could go to learn more about what you're doing?
Sure. They could go to our TRIP webpage. It's treaty7.wordpress.com, and there's all kinds of photos, and there's a short film that we made about the field school up there, and our contact information as well.
Great. Well, I'll move us now, Liam, to the discussion around your faculty learning community. What is the focus of that community, and how did it emerge?
So the faculty learning community developed about a year ago, a conversation that I was having with education developers or curriculum developers here through the Academic Development Center. They had recognized a need, a desire among faculty to learn more, to build capacity in Indigenous education. And we've got a lot of faculty that want to take part in that, that want to empower Indigenous students and bring Indigenous knowledges into their classroom, but aren't totally sure how to do it. And you know, they recognize that their education, their graduate work, didn't include that. They're not experts in this field, and they want to do it well. So through the Academic Development Center, Michelle Yeo and I created a faculty learning community on Indigenous education. And we got a group of 12 faculty who volunteered to be guinea pigs for this experiment. And we've spent basically the last 8 months meeting every 3 weeks to discuss kind of seminal works in Indigenous education and how they can indigenize their classrooms and their courses, how they can bring Indigenous knowledge into the class.
So it's, in a way, like you were saying earlier, it's a classroom for teachers.
Yeah, it's basically a way for us to connect and share ideas and to discuss, you know, in a seminar style classroom, almost like going back to grad school and talking about some of these ideas and how we might implement them. It builds in a lot of ways on the field school because we spend most of our time on campus for logistical reasons, but we've also been able to get off campus a couple of times for some experiential learning opportunities with the faculty. So in partnership with the Nakota Nation through the Stoney Tribal Administration, we spent a couple of days in Kananaskis in the fall doing some cultural programming there. And then we were at Old Sun Community College on the Siksika Nation, learning about the curriculum development that's happening at Old Sun, as well as some of the other cultural teachings that those involved at Old Sun think are the most important for learners, not just Indigenous learners at Old Sun, but also for all students who are engaged in Indigenous education right now. And I think if you talk to the faculty that have been part of it, the seminars are great, but it's really the experiential opportunities and working directly with Indigenous education partners that have been the most inspiring and probably the most illuminating.
It might be too early to even know what the impact of this FLC might be in these teachers' teaching practices, but have you seen any signs of where it's leading people or the kinds of changes to their own teaching practices?
We've seen some concrete examples on a kind of a small scale. So in meetings that we've had, a couple of the individual participants have brought with them to get some feedback on courses they're developing or the ways that they're modifying existing courses in light of what they've learned. So the way they're changing maybe assignment and assessment strategies or the way that they're incorporating Indigenous philosophy into theoretical aspects of courses. So we had one instructor talk about the ways that she's indigenizing her innovation and entrepreneurship courses. And another faculty member showed us the course outline he's developed for a new child and youth course within social work. So we're seeing some examples, but I think the broader kind of more qualitative ways that it's, I think, informing our participants' teaching, I don't know if we have a good sense of that just yet, aside from kind of the comments and some of the feedback that we're getting week to week as we meet. Again, the experiential portions of the FLC, that's really been, I think, the most rewarding. And it's in those examples, you know, watching faculty working directly with, for example, faculty at Old Sun Community College, you know, to talk about the ways that they can empower learners. I think that's going to be have the greatest impact. And we don't know, I don't think, the full extent of that yet.
And so I'm wondering if colleagues in the academy were interested in starting to indigenize their own campuses, either here at Mount Royal or in other institutions in Canada, or, you know, we have listeners from all over the world. Is there advice you would give to colleagues who are just kind of setting out on this path?
As I said at the beginning, I really see the field school as kind of a catalyst, not only for the faculty learning community, but for other work that Mount Royal is doing within this broad understanding of indigenization. And at the very foundation of that is partnership building. For far too long, universities have assumed that they know what Indigenous learners need and what Indigenous communities want from a post-secondary education. they're not always wrong, but they have been. So I think, you know, foundational to all the work that we've been involved in and the way that we've tried to structure indigenization work here at Mount Royal is by going out to communities and, you know, without a set agenda and without consulting on ideas that we've come up with on our own, but just asking communities what they need. How can universities better help them achieve their educational goals, right? How can we better serve Indigenous youth in those communities? And you know, what we find through those processes is that, I mean, that's the best way to decolonize, to indigenize what we do and to empower learners. And because it extends far beyond just Indigenous learners. A lot of these aren't just, you know, good teaching and learning strategies for indigenization. They're just good teaching and learning strategies generally. And so those relationships have been foundational to the work we do. And that would be the first thing I say is build the relationships and then do the work.
I guess I'd add as well, don't be afraid to take some risks. The very first year that we ran the field school, it was the year of the floods in Calgary and the best laid plans, as they say. So a lot of the places we were supposed to stay in, the communities that we were supposed to work with, were in the midst of chaos, and it works out. Every single year that we've ran that field school and the things that have come out of the field school, I think are getting better. And sometimes you need to make yourself vulnerable and to find some colleagues, right, who have similar interests. I don't know if we would have made it through that first year without having each other to rely on. So there's lots of people on campus now because of things like the FLC, where we're getting a community of people who are interested in indigenization and to reach out to those people and see if you can partner or find a way to, you know, it might be something as small as bringing an Indigenous speaker into your class. It doesn't necessarily have to be a whole field school or something like that. But there's lots of ways that we can bring Indigenous voices into our classes that we haven't been doing a great job of so far.
And foregrounding those voices.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I see it as also this sort of a capacity building process, that it's going to take time. There's those relationship building aspects of this work are about the long term. And it will take time for people to become more comfortable and more versed in how to do this work.
Yeah, and there's a fine line there. We don't have a lot of experts on campus in Indigenous education, Indigenous philosophy, Indigenous ways of knowing, right? These are all quite new fields within academia, and we can't possibly meet the demand right now that we have. So capacity building is really important, and it's important for faculty to recognize what they can do to build the expertise they need to contribute to indigenization and to, you know, to do work in this area. And we can't rely on Indigenous communities. It's not fair to put the onus on Indigenous communities and Indigenous people to teach the academy. There's a middle ground somewhere in there where we're building partnerships, but also taking the responsibility ourselves to do the learning we need and to build the capacity necessary to do this work in the right way and in a good way.
It'd be really wonderful if one of the things that people take away from our chat today is this idea that we are all treaty people. And that really is sort of the foundation that the Field School is built on. It's the foundation, I think, of the FLC in a lot of ways. What does that mean? I mean, one of the first things you asked us today is, what the heck is Treaty 7? What does that mean? Liam was talking about how important it is to understand the ground beneath our feet. So if people were to take the time to at least start exploring what that idea means to them, whether they're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, we're all treaty people.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Teaching Strides podcast series.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
This has been episode 1 of season 3 on the Teaching Strides podcast. Join us next time when we speak with Professor Sarah Hewitt about a modified flipped classroom.
First of all, I mean, the biggest change I notice is how much more relaxed the classroom is.
Thanks for listening to Teaching Strides. MRU faculty daring greatly. Subscribe to the Teaching Strides series on iTunes. Visit us at teachingstrides.ca, where you can sign up for the RSS feed and email alerts. Teaching Strides is a production of the Academic Development Center at Mount Royal University.